From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio on the campus of UW-La Crosse. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about eagles, and we're talking about eagle viewing season in particular, which I know excites a lot of people throughout our listening area here in southwestern Wisconsin. And we have got a great panel of guests to talk with us. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is obviously an organization that's very concerned with the eagle population in our area. And Rich Stafen is here from Wisconsin DNR to talk to us. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Ezra. Happy to be here talking about eagles.
If it's not one thing, it's another. Scott Mayhus is with the National Eagle Center. Scott, thanks for joining us on Newsmakers.
This is going to be a great conversation. Looking forward to it.
And Scott's colleague, Ed Hahn, is here also from the National Eagle Center. Ed, welcome back.
Pleasure to be back. Always a pleasure. And thanks for having us.
For sure. Amy Reese is with us as well. She's from the Raptor Resource Project in Decorah, Iowa. Amy, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. This is going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And let's start. Rich, we'll start with you. We're talking about eagle viewing season, but the winter months are not typically what people would think of when they talk about regular bird watching. What makes this different? Why is this sort of approaching prime viewing season, as it's known as?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. This is kind of peak season. We have our resident birds that stick around here in southern Wisconsin. And then we also get an influx of migrant bald eagles from the north that also come down here in search of open water and forested bluffs where they can roost. And it's just when you can find those good spots where there's open water and the eagles congregate, it makes for some superb eagle watching this time of year.
So we're talking about eagles being more active during this time of year. Scott, have you noticed there are actually more eagles in the area? Like, is that activity due to more of them being here at this time of year than they might be later in the winter or like closer to spring?
Yeah, this is prime time for eagles moving into this area that have nested across the northern parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Canada. They're being forced out of those areas after the lakes are freezing and snow is covering the landscape. They're looking for a food source, and they're coming down the river valley here. It's like a highway for them, and it's got a lot of little rest stops along the way that they can pull into and find some available food sources. And they're definitely doing that. And the numbers are really good right now. You know, as Rich said, we have our native population that lives here year-round, but those migrants are really here in big numbers. In fact, I led a field trip here just 2 weeks ago here at the National Eagle Center, and just a little backwater lake here downriver from Wabasha, we had 150 bald eagles at that one location alone, 150. And then we went further down the river for the day. Just in a couple hours, we had over 300 bald eagles. I mean, it's just phenomenal at this time of the year with all those eagles right now.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Amy, what about at the Raptor Resource Project? What do you see this time of year in terms of that eagle population in northern Iowa?
In northern Iowa, our two territorial pairs are starting to get ready for next season. So we're seeing a lot of nest building activities. We saw our first copulation at Decorah North, I think 2 days ago, and they're just bringing in sticks and husks and grasses and placing them all around the nest. And then we don't get as many migrants through as you guys do on the river, but we are seeing some migrants come through. So we're seeing some interactions, some territorial chases, and occasionally, especially if it's a juvenile or subadult eagles, the adults don't really care and they'll just sort of tolerate the eagle, at least for a little bit in their territory.
So you're not dealing, it's a little bit different situations across our listening area as far as what kind of activity you see. Amy, do you ever see, like in that territorialness, do you ever see aggression or those eagles who are sort of residential in your area thinking, there are invaders in my space and I need to protect it?
Oh, absolutely. It depends, you know, it depends on a lot of things. They're more aggressive towards full adults. They are not unaggressive towards subadults and juveniles, but subadults and juveniles don't really pose a threat to them or to their offspring very much. So if they actually have eggs and eaglets, they're going to be very territorial this time of the year. They'll chase eagles. They'll protect their nest. But if somebody's going through maybe 500 or 600 feet away, they might just watch them and see if they leave versus getting real upset or tail chasing.
Okay. And Ed, you, Scott was talking about leading a tour and counting all kinds of eagles. And we're talking a lot about eagles migrating through. Do you also have eagles that sort of live in the area who are here the year round?
Yeah, absolutely, we do. And you know, Rich really hit the nail on the head, you know, as to why the eagles are coming here. But one of the things that I think people tend to overlook about why winter is such a good season is the trees are bare. And we do have resident eagles, a very strong population, especially along, you know, the river valley proper, that are here all year. It's just that they're much harder to see during the spring and the summer and until those leaves come down in the fall. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely peak season and we see good numbers. And, you know, Scott was thrilled to share about the field trips that they took out because, yeah, once you, you know, depending on the weather, you can certainly impact when the season starts. It might be a little bit earlier, a little bit later, but now is the time. And it really, I would say, is probably the most common question we get from especially our online audience on Facebook and things like that. But people always want to know, when is the best time to come and see eagles? And the answer we like to give them is, well, when the weather is the worst, there's the most eagles here to be seen.
Rich, let's talk a little bit about eagles just as biological creatures. What's their lifespan look like?
So they can live anywhere from like 20 to 25 years in the wild. But we also have reports of some that can live, or there's reports of an eagle that was 35 years plus. So, yeah, there's some remarkable longevity in the species. As a lot of people know, they reach adulthood usually around age 5. So when they get their white head and their white tail, that's when they can start breeding and reproducing, and they can continue to produce young all the way through their latter years. They can produce a lot of young. Typically they'll lay 2, maybe 3 eggs. Usually they're very few make it to 3 fledglings. Usually it's 1 to 2 that make it to fledgling. Certainly capable of adding to the population.
What do those juveniles look like? They don't have the characteristic, like the white feathers, which sort of, we call them bald eagles. That's a misnomer completely. They're not bald at all. They just have white feathers on the top, giving them that kind of appearance. What do they look like before they get that characteristic look?
Yeah, they're actually very dark their first year with a little bit of smatterings of white. You can actually, if you get good looks, you can age them from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 until they reach their adult plumage. So you can pick out the little different discrepancies in how they're molting and how their age throughout those first 4 years. And they're adding a little bit more white in certain parts until they get a little bit of more white on the tail and on the head when they're reaching age 4, and then they get their full adult plumage at age 5, and they're pretty distinguishable at that point. I think everybody knows what an adult eagle looks like by then.
Now, I know about bald eagles, and I know that's usually what people are talking about when they talk about going eagle viewing around here. I don't know if they live in this part of the country or not. I know there's also a thing called a golden eagle. I don't know about other. Are there other eagle species, Scott? Do we see any of that around our area?
Yeah, we are very fortunate here in our area to have golden eagles that winter here in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and throughout the Driftless area here in this part of Wisconsin and Minnesota. And these are birds that we now know through some of the research that we've done with satellite transmitting devices. We put on some golden eagles from this area, that these birds that winter here, they arrive in mid to late October. They're typically here until February and March. But until we put those transmitters on, we had no idea where they were going. Most people thought they were maybe heading out west somewhere where the golden eagle population a little bit more well-known. But what we're learning, these birds are going into northern parts of Canada, well over 1,000 to 2,000 miles in some cases, straight north into, we're talking Manitoba and into Nunavut. And just below the Arctic Circle is where these birds are nesting during the summer and then coming to our river valley here for the wintertime. And so, yeah, they are, as we were just talking a little bit before, these young bald eagles that are in their first year of life, they're all dark brown and they do look a lot like a golden eagle. So people do kind of misidentify them. So the key thing to remember is, when are they here? Are they here during the winter? And where are you at? For example, in the 25 years now that I've been watching and studying golden eagles here in this area, only on one occasion have I seen a golden eagle within 30 feet of the water. They're not feeding on fish. They're not fish eaters. They're out in our valleys feeding on small mammals such as rabbits and squirrels, and even birds as big as wild turkeys. And so if you're looking along the water and it's in the middle of the summertime, you're looking at a young bald eagle that's just left its nest and looks a lot like a golden eagle.
Wow, it's interesting, though, that they're, I guess, I don't... My unbiological language is like their lifestyle. You're talking about like what they eat, where they hunt, that kind of thing is so different for animals that really are different versions of the same species, right?
Correct. Yeah, they both have the last name Eagle, but that's kind of where it ends right there. They have very different nesting preferences and habitat preferences and all of those things combined. And so they share that last name, but they're very different in their behaviors and habitats.
The eagle's nests are just enormous things. I can see one from my storage unit. It's like it's over a mile away, and you still see it when all the leaves fall off the trees. You look in the middle of the marsh in La Crosse, and there's this giant eagle's nest in the middle of it. Ed, what are those things made of? And like, is that an eagle's home, like, permanently, or do they build a new nest every year when they come back?
Wait, how much time do we have here today? No,
we got the whole hour. Say all you want.
So if you can imagine it, not only do those nests look large, and again, in this time of the year when there's no leaves on the trees, you can see just how many there are. Like, perfect example, I live in Winona. If I'm driving down Highway 61 to La Crosse, I don't even know how many there are along that stretch, but it seems like every, you know, few hundred feet, you see another bald eagle nest. So yeah, they do get very large. And to kind of answer some specifics of your question, typically what's going to happen is they have what's called a strong nest site fidelity. So what that means is, let's say you have a pair of eagles, they go through their mating rituals in a given year. And now they have a couple options. They can either build from scratch, that is, they can find a suitable tree, a suitable location, and start building that nest up, or maybe they find an abandoned nest that is no longer being occupied, and they may decide to take that over. Or they may even find another type of nest, like we've heard certainly cases of osprey nests on some of the towers that are set up, or even hawk's nests in certain cases. They may usurp those and take it over and make them their own. So in any given season, let's say they're starting from scratch, you know, they're going to build a nest that, you know, might be, you know, 3-4 feet in diameter and maybe a foot or two deep in that first year. And so because they have that nest site fidelity, they are going to go back typically every year to that same nest site in the spring or late winter. You know, both of that pair are going to come back. If they both survive the winter, they're going to go through their mating rituals again. And then part of that bonding process and preparation for nesting season is they're going to bring fresh materials to the nest. So every year that the nest is active, they're going to be adding more material to it. They're going to get a little bit wider. They're going to get a little bit taller, but they're not hollow. The floor of the nest is always kind of at the top. There's a little lip that goes around just to make sure that the young don't fall out and the eggs don't fall out, but they're going to build a flat floor at the top of that nest, and they're going to cover up all of the waste from last year. Typically after a nesting season, you're going to have a lot of junk piled up, food scraps, you know, all that stuff that piles up in there, and you're going to end up with a mound. Well, laying eggs on a mound probably isn't going to work too well. So they flatten that out, they create a new floor. And so if you can imagine it, you know, this nest that you talked about that you can see over a mile away from your storage facility, that's a solid structure. You know, you see the outside shell of it, but really that's going to be solid sticks, moss, grass, junk, whatever materials that have built up.
So comparing to other birds' nests, we think of that as being like a bowl, almost. And it's not so much that. You're saying it's basically like flat. I mean, it's a really thick, thick, flat, like, to continue the dish analogy, maybe more like a really thick plate with like sides around it.
Correct. That's actually not a bad description, although it is still referred to as the nest bowl, okay. But you're absolutely correct. It's not going to be as deep as you might suspect with other types of birds. So yeah, but every year they're using it, they're adding more material, they're going to give it a little bit of a facelift. And as a result, those nests get very, very large.
Wow. It's amazing. And it's an interesting conversation about a very interesting animal. We're talking about eagles today on Newsmakers, and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. That was Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center. Scott Mayhus is also here from the National Eagle Center, along with Rich Stafen from the Wisconsin DNR and Amy Reese from the Raptor Resource Project. And our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you'd like to get in touch with Newsmakers about this or any other issue that's on your mind, you can send me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org. Newsmakers@wpr.org. I'll get your email almost right away, and usually just takes me an hour or so to get back to you. And I would love to hear from you about anything you'd like. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, talking about eagles with Amy Reese from the Raptor Resource Project, with Scott Mayhus and Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center, and with Rich Stafen from the Wisconsin DNR. I want to talk about the eagles as a sort of, I mean, it's interesting that we have so many of them in this area, because it's just an iconic national symbol for us here in the United States. And through most of my childhood, the conversation was about how endangered they were, how at risk they were of disappearing from the face of the earth, really. And now the conversation is far more encouraging than that. And so I want to talk to you, Rich, because it was on your website where I saw these side-by-side images. One was a map indicating where there were active eagle nests in Wisconsin in 1974. And the other one was a map of where there are active eagle nests, well, in 2019, which was just 3 years ago. So and the difference is just astounding. I mean, there are, if I'm guessing, you know, five or six times more active nests now than before. And prior, you know, in the 70s, the nests were limited to the very northernmost part of Wisconsin, and now they're throughout the state. What accounts for that difference?
Well, I think the big thing was in the early 70s, the removal of DDT from the landscape, and that's enabled a recovery for the bald eagles. And then also some factors with habitat, like improving water quality and maintaining forested buffers along rivers and streams and lakes and stuff certainly helps as well. But yeah, it's been a remarkable recovery. Eagles have now been found in all 72 counties in the state, but that was a kind of a exciting update. I think last year we had eagles nesting in Milwaukee County. That was the last county to have eagles nesting there. So we were able to check that one off the list too. And I focus in southwestern Wisconsin. That's where I do our eagle surveys down there. And we've seen, continued numbers of eagles nesting down there. Primarily, initially it was along the lower Wisconsin River, and the Mississippi River was where they were focused, but we're seeing them really fill in those areas for sure, but then also expand away from the rivers as well. We see them on some of the lakes. There's not as many lakes down there as there are in other parts of the state. So the highest density of nesting eagles in Wisconsin is, as you were mentioning, in the north, kind of in the northern highlands. Vilas and Oneida County, that's the greatest density of nesting pairs up there. But in the south, we see them filling in along the river systems. And then, we're even seeing them along smaller streams in southwestern Wisconsin. We're seeing them along ag field edges and large tree rows. They're nesting in there. So they're really filling in and continue to expand in southwestern Wisconsin, even though there's been some challenges in the last year or two with avian influenza and taking its toll on eagle populations. We're still getting additional reports of new eagle nests in southwest Wisconsin. In other parts of the state, they seem to be leveling off. I think they've reached kind of that carrying capacity in a lot of the northern parts of Wisconsin. But in the south, I think there's still suitable habitat that the eagles are still moving in, and we're still seeing additional pairs take up residence down here.
Scott, what about in Minnesota? I didn't happen across that data as I was looking up stuff for today's show, but has there been a comparable increase in population in your state?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the current numbers for Minnesota. I applaud Wisconsin. They've done a wonderful job the last years at getting a really good handle on that number. Minnesota's working on that. And so I don't know their latest numbers for you there, Ezra, but I know that, you know, probably well over 2,000 pairs of bald eagles nesting in the state of Minnesota currently. And so just a phenomenal, you know, number, you know, when you think about, as you were saying earlier, in those early days in 1963, for example, there was only about 417 nesting pairs of bald eagles left in the entire lower 48 states. You know, to have over 2,000 just in the state of Minnesota, what an amazing comeback that, you know, something that we really got behind as a culture collectively to help protect this species. And we did that. And so that's a wonderful applaud for all of us that were part of that. But as I always like to say, as a naturalist, you know, there's so many other critters out there that still need our attention, and they're not our nation's symbol. They're not quite as charismatic, but they still need our attention. And if we put our mind behind saving the bald eagle, we can do that for some other cool critters out there as well. So let's take the time to do that.
Certainly. Amy, you talked about the eagles that nest in your area. And I was listening to the answers to my questions about eagles' nests and the things Ed was saying about how often, how long they return. And I was wondering about your resident eagles there. How do you know how long they've been coming back or how long they've been living in the nests that you know of?
Yeah, so at this point, we're looking at multiple pairs of eagles over time, because eagles will come to a territory and they might chase the other eagles away, or you might have a partner die and then the living partner will accept a new eagle, right? So you'll see sort of continued occupancy not only by one pair of eagles, but by multiple eagles over time. In Decorah, mom nested in the area since 2007. And we've had that territory actually split in two. So we're now looking at two eagle nests there and a third one in our north location. The two new eagles we're calling HD and HM, we don't really know much about them or where they came from, but they took over an eagle's nest that we rebuilt in 2021 in an attempt to get the original eagles back. It's kind of a soap opera, right? And then the north eagles, the male has been there, we think, since 2018. No, the male has been there since 2016, and the female's been there since 2018.
Okay. You talked about rebuilding nests. What was that process like?
Oh, that was actually pretty interesting. So after the original Decorah eagles, or at least the original female and her new mate, left that territory, we thought maybe we could lure them back. It's right by the Decorah trout hatchery. There's an endless amount of fish. It's just a fantastic territory for an eagle. So we put a frame up in a tree and then hauled up sticks from the Decorah yardway site, got a real steady, solid nest, sort of like a plate, perfect description. And then we waited to see if we could attract them back. And instead, we attracted a new pair of eagles that, for all practical purposes, appear to be settling down for nesting in 2023.
I know various, Ed and Scott and Amy, I think I've seen references in your areas to places where people can look at streaming views of eagles from your website. Amy, why don't you start and talk about what eagles we can look at from the Raptor Resource Project perspective?
Oh, sure. So you can go to our website, www.raptorresource.org. And you can watch actually three pairs of eagles, so two here and then one out in Colorado. The Decorah eagles are HD and HM, so a lot of people would think of at least the site as the home of the original Decorah eagles. The Decora North Eagles are up on an undisclosed location north of Decora. And then we have a pair of eagles out in Platteville, Colorado.
How long have those feeds been up? Like, have people been able to watch those nest sites for like multiple years and see how all that progresses? Or are these pretty new opportunities?
Oh, yeah. Back in 2009, we put the Decora Eagles online. And at that time, you could watch a picture that was uploaded to the web every 2 minutes. In 2010, we had a live feed from Luther College. And then in 2011, we had a live 24/7 feed with a different provider. And it just went completely nuts. It was totally viral.
That's
amazing. So, yeah, you've been able to watch them for a while. And it's been interesting to collect information on them over time, who the mates are, nesting success, what each year looked like, the problems in each year, vocalizations, video. We've just collected a lot of information, really, really rich information about the lives of these eagles.
Speaking of vocalizations, I don't want to nerd out about it here, but there's an amazing article on your website now about the different ways that birds vocalize. And I was reading it, interested in it because I majored in voice in college. And so it was like interesting to hear that some of that terminology that comes up in vocal pedagogy a lot, as we're learning about that as music majors, is sort of similar to what this article was talking about. And that's at your website. If anybody wants to read complicated, detailed language about how large birds vocalize, they can go to your website. Why don't you tell us what that website is one more time?
Okay. Yeah. That's www.raptorresource.org. And I have to confess, I got a lot of help with that. I have a husband who's been in choral music, and then my youngest son is at the University of Minnesota with majors in music and a minor in linguistics. So I immediately went to both of them and said, I know what I want to say, what language do I use? So that was helpful.
Well, it was wonderful to read. I know that. It was very, very, very interesting. Ed, what about the National Eagles Center? Tell me about either cameras or opportunities that people have to interact with your resident ambassadors.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the subject of nest cams, we don't have a nest cam per se, but we do have a webcam. We call it the Eagle Watch Cam, and that is a live feed 24/7. That camera is mounted right on top of our center here, and it overlooks the main channel of the Mississippi River. And of course, throughout the year, you know, we see bald eagles every single day, but mm-hmm. particularly in the winter, we have a resident pair that likes to perch in one of the big trees just literally about three blocks down the street. And so we're able to focus the camera on that and let people see that pair. But even when the ice sheets are out there, you know, right along the main channel, we've seen some really cool scenes and activity. This is going to be our fourth year that we're coming into of having this camera. And it's a way for our audience and our members and our guests to just log on through our website and just see what's going on. You know, maybe it's a Thursday afternoon and, you know, it's nice weather and you're like, oh, I wonder what the eagles are up to. So you can just kind of hop on there, and we always have it panning and scanning, so you can see what's happening right there outside the National Eagle Center. So that's what we have for webcams. I would say, you know, other than actually visiting the live eagle ambassadors that we have here at the center, we right now are in our field trip season. And so, you know, Scott is one of the field trip leaders that will take groups out on a coach bus, and we go out to pre-scouted locations. And like he said earlier, you know, they see eagles. You know, they go out there and they see more than just eagles. But we have one actually coming up this Saturday. It'll be a golden eagle focus. And so it'll be a great opportunity for people to have a traveling classroom experience on the bus. But then once you get to those viewing locations, they can get off the bus, they'll set up spotting scopes and enjoy the show. And I think Scott would be able to attest that he has never been skunked on one of his trips. They always see something.
Scott, is that true?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad he said and included the word something. What he was going to say was, I've never been skunked showing people golden eagles. And I always worry about that day because that may happen, because these birds are very challenging to find. I'll admit that when I start those field trips is that, you know, I'm hoping to show you some golden eagles today, but I can't guarantee it. These are wild birds. And they've literally been overlooked in this river valley here for a lot of years because they are fairly secretive and a little bit more hidden in the landscape. They don't stand out the way a bald eagle does. And so even if you go to the right location where other people have seen golden eagles, there's a fair chance that you're not going to see one unless you know exactly, you know, where to be looking in the trees and particular trees. They use the same trees year after year. And so once you learn those things, then you have a better chance of doing that. But as Ed was saying, though, you know, especially when I'm leading the field trips, I'm a naturalist at heart. And so I like to show everybody a little bit of everything from the, you know, the hardwood forest to the backwaters of the river valley. And so, you know, maybe our focus is golden eagles, but I can guarantee you we're going to have a lot of other fun learning about the whole landscape out there as well.
And so if people want to learn more about what events or what that tour schedule is or anything else at the National Eagle Center, where do they go?
Yep, they can go to our website, nationaleaglecenter.org, and they go to our experiences page there or events to see what else is going on too. But the experience page will get you to those field trips. And like Ed did a wonderful job, we do them in the coach bus. But then we have individual field trips. So if you want to just go out as a couple or a family, we do what are called habitat tours. We'll take you out there in, you know, our own vehicle and your vehicle, and we'll get that little bit more close experience learning about the wildlife and the habitat. And then mentioning about, you know, experiences, we also do behind the scenes types tours at the Eagle Center as well. We haven't been able to do those this summer because of, as mentioned earlier, the threat of avian flu. We didn't want to bring anybody into our back rooms with, you know, something on their shoes that would transfer that avian flu. So we suspended those, but we'll be hopefully being able to get those going here again here as this, hopefully the avian flu season with the temperatures going down and waterfowl moving out of the area. Hopefully that'll help decrease the numbers here for us, so we can start offering those behind the scenes tours.
We're talking about eagles today on Newsmakers, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you've missed part of today's conversation, or if you'd like to catch up on previous episodes of our show, you can find them all at WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Or just search for WPR Newsmakers in your favorite podcast platform and find us that way. Leave a review while you're at it. I would appreciate it very much. We're going to talk about if you're out and about, how you can and should, or maybe even shouldn't, be interacting with eagles and other wildlife. We're going to talk about how protected the eagle is and what laws are still in effect about how you can interact with them. That's all coming up on Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Wisconsin Public Radio, and you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio. Thank you very much for joining us today. Scott Mayhus, Ed Hahn, Rich Stephan, and Amy Reese are all with us, and we're talking about eagles today. Rich, circling back to you, I keep leading off every segment with Rich. I should have warned you about that. I'm thinking about all of the different technology that's available to people as far as interacting with wildlife, bird watching. There's got to be stuff out there available to people who are interested in viewing or tracking or otherwise eagle activity, but with that come inherent risks about how we interact with wildlife and things that might disturb their lifestyle or their nesting or mating rituals or anything else that we might inflict upon them. Talk about that sort of technology and sort of our modern practices and what we've come to expect as people who want to view wildlife, but also doing that in a way that's respectful and actually maybe even helpful to how the wildlife need to live.
Yeah, I think so. We're talking so much about winter eagle watching right now. So the big thing to consider now is that it's a very sensitive time and period for the eagles. It's harsh conditions, not as much food, cold weather. So we want to really be cognizant of not disturbing them when they're trying to make it through this difficult period of time. So what we typically recommend is if you're out at a location where there's eagles congregating, one thing to potentially do certainly is to maybe just stay in your car. A lot of times you're able to get close enough in your car and get really good looks at them. that's less of a disturbance for the eagles if you do get out. Certainly keep your distance from them. One thing to consider, and what we say is, if an eagle flushes when you get out, or if you're walking around and get too close to it, if it flushes, then you know that you're too close. So we just want to make sure that we're giving them ample distance and allowing them to make it through this really difficult time and period of their life.
You said when an eagle flushes, tell me what that is. What does that mean?
Basically, if they're usually going to be perched on a tree or a limb or somewhere near the edge of a river, say, where they're fishing or looking for something to eat. Basically, it just means that they're flying off from that perch. So you've gotten too close, and it causes them to want to add some more distance to where they were and feel a little bit more safe if they take flight and move to a safer distance away. So that's what we're talking about when we say flush.
What about people interacting? There are all kinds of laws about how people are allowed to interact with eagles. What are some of those top line things people need to know? I mean, obviously there's no like hunting season or anything like that for bald eagles, for obvious reasons. There are laws though restricting like the possession of parts of eagles that might have been preserved or even those that could be handed down. And there are some, cultural exceptions for that among native communities in different ways. Talk about those laws and what people need to be careful of.
Yeah, so a lot of those laws are in effect for nesting, the nesting period and the nesting eagles. So there's all of our native bird species are protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And then as our eagles, an additional layer of protection, there's the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. So there's safeguards and buffers put in place to limit any kind of disturbance or activities near a nest. And that includes both the active nest, and a lot of times they'll have a alternate nest in their territory, even older nests that aren't being used. Those laws protect those as well. And what you're referring to, I think, is a lot of the protections are in terms of protecting the birds themselves, but also their nests in particular, and any young or eggs that are in there. You can't possess or harm or disturb any of those items. And then, yeah, so a lot of when we come across a dead eagle or a carcass, there's a process that we follow. They all get sent out to the National Eagle Repository in Colorado. And then this is through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they take measures to hand out some of the eagle parts or feathers that go to Native Americans and stuff that folks that are very interested in having those as a cultural resource. But they handle all of that. And we just send them out to them, and they put them in their repository and take it from there.
In terms of what people might come across, Amy, what about if people in your area like come across an eagle or another raptor who's injured or they think it might need assistance? What's the best course of action for them to take? I'm assuming they don't just load it up in a box and put it in the trunk and try to help it out.
No. A lot of times we'll get calls about injured raptors. People can also call specifically in this area. Certainly you can call your local conservation officer, although they may or may not respond, depending on the situation. You can call a local veterinarian who may be able to connect you with wildlife people. A lot of DNRs keep lists of rehabbers by county, so you can go look up and see who in your county is doing raptor rehab or dealing with wild eagles or eagles and other animals. You can also call the Raptor Center, and you can call Cooley Region Humane Society if all else fails, because again, really your best bet is probably a conservation officer or a veterinarian, or looking online to see who in your county is doing raptor rehab or who in a nearby county is doing it. But if nobody else can help you, those two at least might be able to get you to somebody who can.
And Ed, the laws are different from state to state, but in general, pretty much people who work as in any kind of wildlife rehabilitation aspect have been are required to be trained to do that kind of work. It's not just sort of your neighborhood hobbyist who has some experience with raccoons or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Absolutely. You're dealing with people who are trained and permitted.
Yeah, exactly. Amy just had it correct. Yep. It's all about the federal permitting. You have to make sure you have the correct stuff.
I want to give each of you an opportunity to talk about what your organizations are involved in, and in particular, what's coming up in the new year as that gets underway. Scott, let's talk about the National Legal Center. What have you got coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah, well, the one thing that I'm really excited about is our 19th annual Golden Eagle Survey. 19 years now we've been doing this, where we have citizen scientists, everyday people who are just interested in learning more about identifying golden eagles and bald eagles. They go through a training session. We then send them out on the road and get them onto the bluff country here, the Driftless area. Last year, by the way, the Driftless area in our area covers over 24,000 square miles, and our surveyors cover all of that during the survey period. And last year, had about 200 people out on survey day, and we counted about 100 golden eagles in our survey area. Now, also, we just talked about the bald eagle population and how much that's increasing. On that same survey day last year, we had over 1,643 bald eagles on our survey day. And as I mentioned earlier, the golden eagles are not found near the water. So our survey routes are not near the Mississippi River or near the backwater areas. They're in the forested valleys, the farm country areas. That's where these golden eagles are. But that's also where there's a lot of golden eagles, bald eagles. So it really shows you how that population has increased. And so also, anybody who has an interest in birds, been bird watching for a while and wants to help take part, I am creating new survey routes. Last year we had 73 survey routes, but I'm ready with a pen and marker and my map system to create new areas, because we know these golden eagles are beyond the Driftless area. We know that they're in the central parts of Wisconsin, central parts of Minnesota. So we really want to expand that survey, even down into Iowa there for Amy and the folks down there at the Raptor Resource Project. And so all I got to do is, you know, reach out to the National Eagle Center, just send an email to golden@nationaleaglecenter.org, golden@nationaleaglecenter.org, and let me know that they're interested in the survey. I will then set them up with a survey training session. You got to attend about a two-hour session, but it's via Zoom, and we'll work you through making sure you're an expert at knowing how to look at juvenile bald eagles and golden eagles. And as we've learned before, we're going to see lots of other cool things out there as well. Rich has helped with the survey for many years now, and so appreciate his help over the years. And so pass the word that the National Eagle Center is looking for citizen scientists. We can really make a difference. You know, when I first started looking for golden eagles down here 25 years ago, most people had no idea they were here. And the bird books, back of the bird books, the little maps didn't show them in this area. And now when you look at those bird books or you look online, those maps show the golden eagles are here. It's all because of the work that the National Eagle Center and the citizen scientists have been doing in this area.
So you mentioned the survey date. What time frame are you looking at?
Yeah, so the survey is always the third Saturday in January. So this year it'll be January 21st. And I would say that most surveyors are out for about 4 hours on average. We get some people that are out for 6 hours, some that are out the whole day from sun up to sundown. But I would say most average amount of time spent, it's about 4 hours. That's a sufficient amount of time to be able to drive some backcountry roads. I mean, some beautiful country around here. You mentioned earlier, you think about birds, bird watchers don't think about, you know, getting out much in the wintertime, but what a great way to get out, force yourself to get out and explore some of this backcountry, see some habitat that we might only see in the summertime, but it's just as pretty and unique in the wintertime.
Amy Reese from the Raptor Resource Project, what have you got coming up in 2023 that people should be paying attention to?
We're excited to be watching our eagles, of course. So we'll be watching the eagles in Decorah and Decorah North. We're very excited about a golden eagle tracking project that we started last year. We're currently tracking an immature female golden eagle who's back in the southwestern Wisconsin area. She spent the summer up in Nunavut, way up kind of near Gajoa Haven. So we're just fascinated to expand the program and really looking forward to seeing what we can learn. And then we'll have peregrine falcon banding, because that's really where we got our start, that we'll be looking forward to beginning in May.
And you have, I mean, we've been talking about eagles today, but as you mentioned, you're involved in all kinds of things with other raptors. What are the other kinds of birds other than eagles that you're interacting with on a regular basis?
Our primary work and where we got our start was with the peregrine falcon. So our founder was very involved with peregrine falcon recovery. He bred the first peregrine falcon to return and breed in the wild mid-continent. So that was MF1 in 1987. And like the eagles, and for many of the same reasons, the peregrine population has just exploded. They're doing very well. And that we saw at our nest, they really weren't affected by highly pathogenic avian influenza, which was really, really good to see. So every year we monitor between 50 and 60 sites with the help of landowners, volunteers, industrial partners, and then we'll go out and ban those young, try to identify the adults, and continue adding to a longitudinal database of peregrine falcons and peregrine falcon recovery that goes back to 1987.
Wow. That's impressive. So, Rich, from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, I know you are involved in other people's projects as well. Scott talked about you being involved in their tracking project. You've got things of your own that people can be involved in too. What's going on at DNR?
One of the roles that we play at the DNR is to do activity flight surveys in the spring. We'll be planning those for this winter to do a flights in March typically is when we do them, see which nests are active. And then a huge partner with us on the eagle monitoring front is the Madison Audubon Society here, who has initiated the Bald Eagle Nest Watch, a citizen science program, where they're monitoring well over 100, 120 or more nests throughout the state. So they're giving us really great information on productivity so they can take it to the next step and give us information on which nests are producing young and how effectively they're producing young. So we've partnered with them, and they'll be seeking out recruiting volunteers here for the coming field season and nesting season. And then kind of right around the corner is we usually try and promote eagle watching days. There's a few of those around the state. There's one in the Fox Valley. There's one in Prairie du Chien, and then we also help coordinate one in Sauk City with the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council. So that one's coming up in mid-January, and it's a really great opportunity to get out and do some viewing along the Wisconsin River. They have tours and field trips and live eagle and raptor shows there. So it's a really great event, and that's again in mid-January on the weekend, I think of the 14th and 15th. And then, yeah, just finally, we eagles are beloved throughout the state. We have a bald eagle plate through our program here at the DNR, our non-game program, an endangered resources plate that focuses on or kind of highlights the bald eagle, and it's been hugely popular. So if people are interested in providing or helping us with our endangered resources fund, they could buy a really awesome bald eagle plate that will look really sporty on your car.
And if people want more information or to contact your part of the DNR, how can they find you online?
Yeah, so you can go to dnr.wi.gov. We have a page on eagles. It's Eagles in Wisconsin.
And Amy, what about you? How do people find the Raptor Resource Project online?
Go to www.raptorresource.org O-R-G, or Google the Raptor Resource Project. That'll work too.
Sounds good. And Ed, what about the National Eagle Center?
We are online at nationaleaglecenter.org.
Wonderful. Well, we've been talking about eagles today on Newsmakers, and a really interesting conversation it is. And it makes me want to get out and go for a drive this weekend and look around the area and see what I can spot, and then do it again in a few weeks and see if I spot any more. So Ed Hahn and Scott Mayhus from the National Eagle Center, thank you for joining us today.
It's been great to chat with you today, and I look forward to taking a look at that nest that you saw down there by La Crosse. I believe I know which one you're talking about, and that's an amazingly massive cottonwood tree. Man, yeah. That's a huge tree.
It's just amazing. Enormous. It's just enormous.
Yep.
That's Scott. Thank you, Scott. Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks.
And Amy Reese from the Raptor Resource Project. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was a great time.
Rich Stafen is with the Wisconsin DNR. Rich, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. This is really great to get the word out on bald eagles in the state.
Certainly. I hope a lot of people take advantage of the information. If you have missed part of our conversation today and you want to listen to it again, or if you want to catch up on other episodes of Newsmakers, you can find them all online, wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Or just search for Newsmakers in your favorite podcast platform and find us there. You can send me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org, newsmakers@wpr.org. Or you can, of course, always catch us on the radio. There's a couple of opportunities to hear us every week. We're on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We're on Friday evenings at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And as I mentioned, always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. Production help each week comes from Kate Spranger. Thank you, Kate. Appreciate it. We'll be back again next time. Join us for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.